You have a beautiful packet in front of you. Beautiful not only because it's beautiful and I spent a lot of time making it, but because I spent a lot of time trying to get the machine to cooperate, produce it.
The true
standard. Shiro is entitled Of Prophecy and Priests, Understanding the Choshen HaMishpat. If you would like to take a look at the Choshen HaMishpat, which is what we will be discussing, it is on the last page of the packet, in the beautifully colored printing that did not happen to the Makina machine, but rather to my own personal printer, is the back page. So this is what we're going to be talking about. We are starting Parashat Tetzaveh. We already started it this week.
And what that means is that this parasha, after we started discussing the Mishkan in general, is going to get into specifically the Kohanim and their specific garb, all the garments that they're supposed to wear.
They have their breastplate that they're for.
Right, as the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest of the Kohen Gadol.
Was it really
the color? Yeah, that's why people call it here in Vernon.
You ask some questions, you shake the
garment. So that is the beginning of this parasha. All of the unique garments of the Kohen Gadol and what they call the Kohen Hedyot. Kohen Hedyot, Hedyot means normal. So a normal Kohen, a regular Kohen, also has its own unique garment. So maybe we'll discuss that a little bit more in detail as we go on. But suffice it to say, the Kohen Gadol has 8 garments that he must wear. I didn't print them all out for you, but here is the handy-dandy color book. And here is a picture of a Kohen Gadol, in theory. I mean, they may not all have had white beards like this, but maybe, who knows? So, this goes through the different garments of the Kohen Gadol. The basic 4 garments were similar to the garments that a regular Kohen Hedyot would wear, which is Hedyot. Hedyot means regular or normal. So if you look at this page right here, you'll notice that there's like a long like robe type of coat, and there are breeches.
There are Kohanim boxers.
Yeah, sort of. They're like shorts for the Kohen. He had a belt, a long belt, and a hat. So the Kohen Gadol also had similar to this. He also would wear the white coat, and he would have the shorts. And the belt and a hat. Although his were slightly different. Here's the hat of the Kohen Hedyot with a little knob on top or not. But the hat of the Kohen Gadol was a different shape. So that was his hat. But that's a major similarity in the 4 garments that was parallel, more or less, to the Kohen Hedyot. They were at least similar. Those are the 4 garments that were really similar to each other. Now, the next 4 are unique only to the Kohen Gadol in their entirety.
Can we color and draw that book, too?
My kid can't even color and draw this book. No way. Although it's in pretty bad shape because they love to look at it. Well, okay. This is called the ephod. The ephod is sort of like an apron. And you'll notice that it can't really stay on the Kohen Gadol because it doesn't connect to anything, which is where the Choshen comes in. That's going to be important for our discussion, by the way, that the ephod can't connect it. It can't stay on without something else to connect it. That'll be important, so just keep that in mind. So this is the back, whether or not it has straps or it has a full part to it. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion since it's been a long time. This is the Choshen. We call it the breastplate in English. In Hebrew, we're going to refer to it as the Choshen. It had stones and a name for the tribes. It had a little... In order to complete the entire alphabet, there was more written on it than just the names of the Shvatim. Because if all you have are the names of the Shvatim, you won't have the entire alphabet.
Why was it important?
What do you need the entire alphabet for? So we'll get to that. So if you'll see on this, if you can tell on this picture, you know, some of you are far back, but if you can see over here, you'll notice, and here is where the straps come up from the back on the ephod. And in order to connect, so they connect to the bottom, and so the ephod, this apron will stay on him, it connected to the Choshen. The Choshen had a ring. So you can probably see on the page, actually, on the handout. You'll notice that there are little rings on the edges of it. Those rings are what allowed the eifod to connect to the choshen, and the choshen connects to the bottom of the eifod on the other side, that allowed it to be basically like overalls, and the choshen in the middle, that allowed everything to connect and stay on the kohen gadol. Just physically, so you can get a picture of how he wore it, right? You guys got it straight, right? Pretty basic, pretty straightforward and simple, right? So that's actually a mitzvah in the Torah. Lo yuzach ha-choshen mi'al ha-eifod, it's a negative commandment. You're not allowed to detach the choshen from the eifod. They're always supposed to remain attached.
So,
well, he could remove them, however, he removed them, but you know, they have to be attached. They have to stay attached. They have to stay attached the entire time that they stay attached. I think even when you take them off, they have to remain attached. I think.
So
prohibition
all
is totally
removed. Corners have to be attached, or just one corner?
What? However, he got it
down,
right? But that is a negative prohibition. Whatever is considered detached, but that's a negative prohibition, not also detachment. Okay. Now that we have the picture in our head of what the Choshen was, this is going to be the topic of the shir that we're going to discuss. This is going to be our really, really interesting topic the next couple of days. And what we're going to do at first is discuss what exactly it was, the purpose that it served. And you'll see that there's some very unique and very interesting things about this breastplate. It was not just a normal thing that was there for decorative purposes. It actually did things. It had a certain element of prophecy to it. That's what we're going to discuss. Very interesting item. So here we go. This may take us the next couple of days, but I think you'll find it very interesting. If you look at source number one on our source sheet, it is the Tzukim, towards the beginning of this week's parsha. We're going to point out a number of anomalies. The pasuk says like this, Vasisa choshen mishpat. What does the asisa mean?
What we do, like make.
Right, and you shall make, right? Again, this is a vav hahipuch, so it's taking the future, making it past tense, right? Vasisa asisa, and you shall make. A choshen mishpat. Now, choshen is the word that means breastplate, right? What does mishpat mean? So what does this, what does it have to do with mishpat? Why is it called a choshen
mishpat? Breastplate of judgment.
A breastplate of judgment. What is that supposed to mean? Very strange, right?
A judgment?
A breastplate.
Breastplate.
This choshen. Right? We'll just call it the choshen from now on. Okay, the choshen, that's its name, is here being referred to as a choshen ha-mishpat, the choshen of justice or judgment. Right, so one wonders what exactly that's supposed to mean. What's the judgment? Where is the judging? Who's judging? What's going on? That's number one. Number two, there's a dot, dot, dot. And then it goes on to say, V'asita al ha-choshen, sharsharos bevulos. There are all these chains and these rings that you're making. Again, V'asita. This is going to be important. You're making. It's an instruction to make something, a command to make it. Etc. V'asita al ha-choshen, shtei tabaos zahav. These rings that you're making, again, it's a make on the choshen, two of these rings, etc. V'nasa Aharon, as Shemos B'nei Yisrael, Aaron, who's going to be the high priest, right? He's going to carry the names of B'nei Yisrael, the choshen ha-mishpat. What does it mean, he's going to carry their names?
It's going to be written on it.
That's what's written on them, right? If you look at the picture.
Written or engraved.
Okay, good point. Good point, but at the end of the day, he's carrying the names of the Neisa in the Choshen HaMishpat, Al Libo, you'll notice that's bolded, on his heart, because of course, what's the location of the Choshen?
On his heart.
Over his heart, okay.
Also his lungs.
Oh, El HaKodesh, when he comes to the Kodesh, right, we discussed what the Kodesh HaKadoshim is in the Mishkan and in the Beit HaMikdash later. The Kodesh is the first area that you enter into, where you find the Mizbeach of Ketores, and you find the Menorah, and you find the Shulchan. Beyond that, there's a curtain separating the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the Holy to the Holy of Holies, where the Aron was. So when he comes to the Kodesh, he should be wearing the Choshen HaMishpat on his heart, as a remembrance, as a reminder to Hashem constantly. Okay, let's keep going. V'nasata el choshen ha-mishpat, es ha-urim, v'es ha-tumim. and you shall put to the Choshen HaMishpat, again, Choshen HaMishpat, the Urim and the Tumim. So, two questions. Number one, what's the verb being used over here? Vinostata, and you shall put to the Choshen. What word verb is being used?
Put.
What verb have we been using until now?
Make.
Make. Right? Mm-hmm. Why is that interesting? Because what are you putting into the Choshen? What's this word I used? Urim and Tumim. What is the Urim and Tumim?
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, we're never told to make it. We're never told what it is. We're just told that God tells Moses, put the Urim and the Tumim into the Choshen. Never told to make it, and never told what it is. Pretty strange, right? Doesn't that pique your attention? Well, come in, like, what is it? Not there yet. All right, we'll keep going. V'hayu... V'hayu alev... Yeah, but here we're making things that no one's ever seen before. So you'd expect that everything has to be described, or at least told... Like I told you on the mountain, at least. Now, if this was something that God showed Moses in privacy, so we find that God says, make this like I told you, Bahar, like I told you on the mountain when you were there with me.
Yeah.
Especially since this was given after the Egel, like Rashi said. So there was time when God was teaching Moses all kinds of things and instructing him and showing him things. Kashahar Eis and Bahar. Hear nothing. Just put the Urim and Tumim in. And it shall be where? Well, we knew that, right? Because that's where the Choshen is. This is a funny repetition, right? When he comes before Hashem, that's also repetition, because what did he just say? Bivolo El HaKodesh. Now it's Bivolo El Hashem, with Nei Hashem. Vinata Aharon et Mishpat B'nei Yisrael al Libo. And if you look inside, you'll notice it's just totally repetitive. And Aaron will carry the judgment of Bnei Yisrael on his heart, Lifnei Hashem Tamid, before God constantly. Okay, so what are our questions on this little paragraph over here? Number one, why is the Nasa Aharon repeated? Carry it, and again, the same exact thing again, and he will carry it on his heart. He'll carry it on his heart, he'll carry it on his heart. Third one, already. Number two, why is the phrase Alev Aharon or Alevo on his heart repeated how many times? How many times can you find it? Look at the post. Look at the
three.
How many times do you see Alibo or Alev Aaron? Dan, what do you see? How many times? It's slightly bolded for your visual benefit.
I see three.
Three times. Yes, three times?
One, two, Alev,
or
one of them.
Right. Alev Aaron, it says Alibo below. By you, Alev Aaron, and Bini Alibo is Hashem. So the concept. Alev
is different from Libo.
Alev Aaron. Who's Libo? His heart. Aaron. So it's the same thing. It just leaves out his name. It should reference back to him because we already mentioned it. So it says three times the location. Okay. That's question number two. Question number three. Well, why aren't we ever told to make it? What's the Urim V'Tumim that's going in this thing? And why aren't we ever told to make it? That's three and four. And number five. What exactly does it mean that he'll carry the names of Bnei Israel? Okay, so that we answered, because those are the names that are written on the stone.
So what did the rabbis speculate what it is that we don't know?
You want to know answers, huh? Okay.
I'm curious.
Good, good. We're curious. Okay, we got one curious. Jack, what are you curious about?
There's a lot of repetition.
It's very strange, right? Like, you're reading this, and you're like, I mean, come on, what's going on over here, guys? What's going on? You must be trying to tell me something. I don't know what it is. So what exactly are you trying to tell me?
Also, speaking specifically about Aaron, they're not necessarily
coming
on in general. Yeah.
Right, that's true.
I think that's struck me.
Aaron isn't becoming Gadol.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. But it only was referring to Aaron, not going on Gadol. So maybe it's just with people on Aaron.
Maybe the thing that, you know, was made was only specifically for him.
Right, okay, you could suggest that. We're not going to talk about that point now, but that's definitely a valid point to me. So what changes, what's in between the first, and Aaron will carry the names of Bnei Israel, and the second, Aaron will carry the names of Bnei Israel? What, did something change in between? Was something added, a new piece of information in between the two? Adam, check it out. There says, V'nasa Aaron.
I'm not.
It says Aaron will, you'll like this, it's very interesting. We have to develop it, though. It's going to take a little while to develop, but if you follow me, you'll see something very beautiful.
That's the Urim and the Tumim.
Correct. Aaron, you see that? Adam, you see that?
Yes, sir.
Edmund, you see what's going on? There's Aaron will carry the names of Bnei Yisrael. And then it says again, Aaron will carry the names of Bnei Yisrael, right? What's in between? What's in between the two? What changed in between the two?
The repetition is the question or the...
There's something that happened in between the two verses. Right, if you look at what it says over here, it says, "Anasa Aharon Shemosh Bnei Yisrael B'choshen Mishur Alibo V'Voela Kodesh Zikron Hashem." The first pasuk in English basically means Aaron will carry the names of Bnei Yisrael and the Choshen and Mishur on his heart when he comes to the Kodesh as a reminder for before Hashem. Then there's a piece of information that's there, and it says, "And you shall put into the Choshen what? You put something into the Choshen called the Urim, the Tumim." We don't know what it means yet. Urim v'tumim. Right? If you look at the letters, the way it's spelled, you can see that it doesn't come from the word tameh. It's not a test. But that happens, and then again, after that's said over, then v'nasa aron et mishpat v'nei yisrael v'vos ne'ashem tumim. Again, we have this idea. So what happened in between was the urim v'tumim. So what would you say based on that little hint of information?
They're kind of important.
So why would it be repeated, Vanessa Aaron?
We need to make sure that those two things are included.
So why does that have to tell me again, Vanessa Aaron? In other words, if there was no Urim Mitzumim, I was already told Vanessa Aaron, even before I know about an Urim Mitzumim. Then God says, put the Urim Mitzumim in. And then God says, then he should carry it, and he tells me again he should carry it on his heart. Not clear. Let's go a step further. Maybe we'll get clear. What is the main question of Mishpat, we ask? The question of justice. Why? What makes it justice? Where is the Mishpat? Where is the judgment over here? First number two.
Isn't it common, at that point in time, what was the judgment? What was the system like?
So we saw that there was Moses was judging everyone, and by the time Yisro comes, we saw that Yisro suggested that there would be judges.
He's color the person. So why... So what did Aaron do in that? It's called a representation of something, so that's, I don't know how it can relate that to the judgment.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you come up with something, let me know. So what do you think?
So why is Aaron in that position?
Right. I don't know. So let's try and figure something out. So let's start with Rashi. Rashi is verse number two. Choshen Mishpat. Rashi is bothered by this. Why is it called the Choshen Mishpat? Zokt Rashi, says Rashi, Shemechaper al kilkul hadin. Okay, Rashi has one thing that Chazal tell us, that each part, each, many different aspects of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, atoned for various problems. In other words, not only did sacrifices atone, but certain vessels had their own things that they would atone for, simply by virtue of their existence or by their being worn. So number one, Rashi says, if you have judges that mess up in judgment, so they made a mistake. They did a sin in messing up in judgment, in their error. So this atones for errors in judgment by the fact that he wears the Choshen HaMishpat. That's number one. Number two, Dover Acher. It's an atonement for errors in judgment. For the Aveira, for the sin of making errors.
You just have to have someone else, by the way, because there's no indication that Tony Buddle made any errors in judgment. Wear something and...
That's what it sounds like, right?
It's
kind of
weird.
So it sounds like. Mishpat. What does it mean, Mishpat? Shemevarer devarav v'haftachasel emes. That it clarifies things and that its promise is true. Then you have an old French word, so we'll skip that. Hochacha. It means like a proof. Something that proves something. Sheham mishpat neshame shalosh loshonos. Because in general, Rashi says, the word judgment, if you want to know just linguistically about the word, Rashi says it typically means one of three things. Either it means the claims of two people going to court, or it means the actual gemar hadin, which means like the psak, whatever the bezin comes out with their conclusion. And number three, it could also mean the punishment, whether it's a death penalty or it's some sort of other kind of lashes or something like that. Monetary penalty. The Zemish Amish Lashon Biru Devarim. But this one, says Rashi, means it's clarifying something. Shemefarei Shemevarer Devarim. Because it explains and clarifies its words. Any clue what's going on in Rashi? No clue, right? Like, what's Rashi talking about? The Choshen Mishpat is clarifying something. It's saying it's not talking. It's an inanimate object, right? Number three, Rashi. It's Mishpat B'nai Yisrael. Devar Shehi Mishpatim V'Nochachim Ali Yadav. Oh, yeah, dope. Im asos davar alola asos. It judges B'nai Yisrael because it tells them what to do, whether or not to do it. Let's get this a little bit clearer, Rashi. What's going on over here, right? So, there's another Rashi. We're going to come back to this in a minute, but let's just read it for now. Source number four. Esa urim v'esa tumim. We wondered, what is the urim and the tumim? What is this? What does it mean? What is it? So Urim, if you look at the word, if you look just at Rashi number 4, right? Rashi quotes the phrase from the Torah. Esa Urim, Esa Tumim. You see the letters? Urim, what's the root?
Aleph,
Aleph, Resh, probably. Urim. It's Or, from the word Or, which means light. And what about Tumim? It's not a test. Right. What tam? Yaakov ish tam. Yoshev o'alim. What?
Smart. Or simple.
Simple. Yeah, right? Simple or complete.
Yeah, those two words mean exactly.
Simple and complete.
Often when you say that something is simple, it means it's complete in everything it needs. It doesn't require any more complication. It doesn't require any more development. It's simple. It's on its own. It's complete. It doesn't require other things.
Simple is almost a pejorative term.
Yeah, sometimes you can say it like that. But I think the word in Hebrew, when we especially are talking about Yaakov, he's Tam, Yoshev Olim, he doesn't require anything else. He has everything he needs. He's sitting in the tent, he's learning Torah. So Tam is often referred to as something which is complete, and sometimes maybe related even or interchangeable with Tzadik. And there's those who suggest that Tam and Tzadik maybe are, could mean the same thing in certain contexts. In any case, Urim v'tumim, like you're saying, it sounds like something is, there's light in one word, and there's completion or completeness in another word. So Rashi says like this, what was it? Put the Urim v'tumim in the Choshen, what is it? Says Rashi, Huksav Shema Mefurash. It was a writing out of an explicit name of God. It was a secret name of God that was written onto a piece of paper. If you take a look at the picture I gave you of the Choshen on the last page of the packet, one of the bigger Choshen, the bigger version there, has a little piece of paper that's putting stuck in between two folds. See that? When it says there's a name of 42 letters. Shame some members of you. So that's according to this Rashi. Shehaya nosno v'sochkif le'achosh. And you put this piece of paper in between the folds of the Choshen. Sheal yadohu me'ir devarav. Through it, it would light up its words. U'metameim es devarav. And complete, and simplify, and show, mitame, to complete the words. Okay, let's just pause there for 1 minute. The Choshen talked. You guys heard this before?
I heard that, yeah.
So Rashi is telling us that the Choshen had batteries. Right? What was the battery?
The Urim and
the Tumim. There was a piece of paper that had the secret name of God that was put in between the folds. And when that was there, it apparently acted as a battery that would, number one, light up the letters, and number two, complete the letters. Because just because the letters light up, you don't know how to organize them. Light break. So that's what it was. So they say that you've heard of Chana, right? Shmuel Hanavi. Famous Shmuel Hanavi appointed the first two of our kings of Bnei Yisrael, Shaul and David HaMelech. So Shmuel, his mother was Chana. She couldn't have any children. And she goes to the Beis HaMikdash every year with her husband and her family, the other wife and her kids. And they go to the Mishkan every year, to Shiloh, and they bring their karbanos, and she breaks down crying to Hashem. She wants to have a child. And the Kohen Gadol at the time was Eli. She Kohen Gadol at the time was Eli HaKohen. And he sees her basically davening what we would consider a Shemona Esrei with silently, more or less. Her lips are moving, but you can't really hear what she's saying. And he thinks she's drunk. And he says, get out of here, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing in a Mishkan drunk? And anyone is there, get drunk. And so she says to him, no, you don't understand. I'm just Maris Nefesh. I'm an embittered woman. I'm sad. So the Vilna Gaon says, why did he think she was drunk? Because she was talking, and he couldn't hear what she was saying. Her lips were moving. So the Vilna Gaon writes, because he looked at the Urim Vidumim. He looked at the Choshen. And the letters that lit up, who knows?
Something tells me that, just from what I know about Elia Cohen, that he wouldn't be worthy of
Shin, Kaf, Reish, Pei, which, you put a little, it's a vowel sound there, spells Shikora, that she's drunk. Now, what is it really? He had the Urim, but the Tumim didn't work properly, or he didn't have the proper intention. Something went awry. Because really he was supposed to read it. Kishera. What's Kishera? She's kosher. Everything's in order. Everything's beseder. Everything's kosher with her. Sorry? In a certain sense. Shikora means drunk. Kishera means kosher. Kishera.
Does it refer to the person, the woman, or like?
Yeah, it was a reference to her, that she wasn't doing anything wrong, she wasn't drunk, she was completely in order. There was nothing inappropriate going on with her. Kishera. That was the Vilna Gaon, that was the interaction I had between them over there. Very interesting. So the Urim, part of this name, what it allowed it to do was to light up the letters. But just because the letters light up don't necessarily mean that you can organize the letters properly. This is a good example. So the mitamim, the tumim aspect of this Shem Hashem, allowed the letters to be organized properly, so you'd be able to read them and make sense out of them. Now, what do we see now from the Choshen? How many roles would you say the Choshen have? Well, if the Tumim is working properly, the Kohen has a proper intention on the name of God that's referred to as Tumim,
people will mess
it'll be
mess
fine.
It up. That's just how.
So what roles does the Choshen have? Dan Davidson, what roles does the Choshen have? What does it do?
It looks
one thing it does, yeah, one thing it does is it looks pretty, right?
It lights up.
And number two, it lights up and it tells you messages. You can ask God questions and he'll answer you, right?
So it's like talking to a Ouija board that doesn't have
anything better. Yeah, super duper Ouija board.
It's like a priest or a Ouija board, basically.
Quite like that, but yeah. It answered your question. You ask God a question and he would answer you, would respond. Sounds like a little prophet, right? So, how many roles are we saying now that it has? Two. One role as simply Big Day Kuhuna. What does it mean, Big Day Kuhuna?
It's clothes.
The clothing of the Kohen. The clothes of the Kohen. And number two, it has another function, which is that it's also a Choshen Ha Mishpat, because it has a certain judgment, as Rashi explained. Now we can understand Rashi. Rashi is saying that it speaks to you, how did Rashi say? To Mevarer Devarav, V'Hatzachaso Emes, that it clarifies its words, and whatever it says comes true. Okay, now we understand, because it spoke to you. That's the Urim V'Tumim aspect of it. That it's mayor of Stevarev, U'metamim of Stevarev. That it lights up, and it completes what it's saying. So now we understand Rashi. So I would like to make a humble suggestion, that the reason that the Torah repeats that Aaron shall carry it over his heart, is because he has to carry two things on his heart. Number one he has to carry on his heart what? The Choshen. Because that's the location of the actual garment. But number two, what else does he have to carry on himself?
He needs to interpret it.
Right, there's also a Choshen Hamishpat. It has two aspects to it. What's the third?
But it says it three times, not twice. Vinasa
Aaron, and she'll carry it over his heart, it says twice. On his heart, his heart is mentioned three times.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Okay. But that he shall carry it, is said once, carry it on his heart. Put it in the Urim Bitumim, and carry it on your heart.
So the first one's just the
as a garment, it has a role as a garment. So you have to carry it on his heart. And then we're told about a new piece of information that you put inside what?
The Urim Bitumim.
And then we're told again?
Well, the first one is like physically, show like where to put it, and like,
Sort of. I would say perhaps that what's going on is that he's being instructed to wear two different choshen. You have to wear the choshen as a garment,
And they have to wear the choshen, that's the choshen ha-mishpat that contains within it the Urim v'tumim, because that's a separate, it's like a different thing. He's like wearing two things in one.
The
Urim v'tumim. I say, where's two hats?
It is, there's a piece of paper with Hashem
there. That's what Rashi says. So, he's like being told to wear two things. Number one, wear the choshen. Number two, wear the choshen with the Urim v'tumim in it. So it's repeated in Asa'ara. Interesting shot, right?
I have another question.
Yes.
We know all the names of Hashem. So why don't we use them?
Like, we don't know all of them.
We know the 72 letter name.
We do.
We say it on your, we're not supposed to say it on your Kippur, but whatever.
Okay.
Like, why is it that it doesn't hold the same power that it did then?
I don't know if it does or it doesn't. I don't know anything.
Because back then it stated, you know, like you say this word, like you say one of these names. Yeah,
there are stories. There are a lot of stories about certain rabbis in the Chida. They tell certain stories about him. They use certain names of Hashem to do certain things and accomplish certain things. But most people, I don't think, know how to do that. Do you? No. So we may have certain pieces of information, but we don't really know what to do with it. We don't know how to interact with it. We don't know how to manipulate it. We don't know how to use it. So just because you have this information, I don't think that necessarily does you any good. So that's what I would suggest. V'nasa Aharon, he's carrying two things, the Choshen and the Choshen. But there's something, a new piece of information in between that's been introduced, which is that as Urim V'tumim. So now, back to Rashi. Rashi said it's a Ksav Shema Mefurash, it's a name of God, that had two roles. Meir, it lit up, and Metamim, and it organized the words. Now, let's read this Rashi and read this Rashi carefully. I need your help on this one. You guys ready?
No.
Okay, Adam, whenever you're ready.
I just want to make, if I keep saying this, can I like get out of ever and work?
You could. Whoa. Number four.
Just
Rashi goes on. Now, you tell me if this is normal for Rashi, based on how many Rashis you've learned.
No, but he...
And you tell me...
There are several times when he gives more than one answer.
Correct. Now, what does Rashi say? We didn't read it yet. Number four. You see, it's the second line in Rashi. Second line in Rashi. Rumikdash. You see it? With a mikdash sheni, haya ha-choshen. In the second temple, they had the choshen. She'i etzer le-kohen gadol yos mechusar begadim. Because it's impossible for a kohen gadol to be without one of his garments. He's actually, he gets the death penalty for doing service without one of his garments. Aval ozo ha-shem, lo haya besocho.
But people, it's just by guys from striking dead.
Good question. Aval ozo ha-shem, lo haya besocho. But that name wasn't there. And it's because of that writing, that name of God, that it's called Mishpat Shnemar, Vishallah B'Mishpat HaUrim, and he'll ask the judgment of the Urim. So the Choshen is actually being referred to as the Urim. Interesting. Okay, but leaving that aside for 1 minute, what's going on?
He's giving more information than he needs to.
Isn't that true? Isn't Rashi giving us way more information than we ever wanted to know?
He's
very normal. Dan, did you ask Rashi about the Second Temple, what they had at the times of the Second Temple?
No.
Adam, do you care what they had at the times of the Second Temple? Is that relevant? Edmund, why is Rashi telling us what we had at the times of the Second Temple? Is that relevant for our interpretation of this verse? Does Rashi ever add words that are not necessary? What are the words I'm going to ask now? What? Bothering Rashi.
He doesn't know what
I'm going to write. Well, the Urim and Tumim are separate. Like, they're said kind of separately from the Choshen.
What do you mean? Explain.
Well, it talks about the Choshen.
Yes.
It then talks about the Choshen with the Urim and Tumim.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like they're, you know, why didn't it just straight up say the Choshen with the Urim and Tumim? As opposed to separating it out.
I mean, because it says to put the Urim and Tumim into the Choshen.
Well, I mean, it first talks about just a Choshen.
Right.
And then talks about a Choshen with Urim and Tumim.
Okay.
So, aren't they the same? Like, are they the same thing? Or kind of like, why did it separate them if they are the same thing?
Well, what do you mean they're the same thing?
If there's one Choshen, it has Urim and Tumim.
Mm-hmm.
Just one, he just wears one Choshen, as opposed to where one might see that from the first one, there's just the Choshen about the clothing, and then there's a separate Caution for the
Ramadan. I hear what you're saying. It sounds like you put the Urim V'Tumim into the previously mentioned Koshen, right? It doesn't say in the Pasuk, take another one.
So why did it say in the first place, when it first mentioned the Koshen, why did it say put the Urim V'Tumim in like right away?
That's not what it says? You want it to say before, when we talk about the Koshen?
When it says...
First it says you should wear it. You want it to say before, make it, and then put this in.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good question. Very good.
Where that?
Fine. So I think you're right on if that's how you're going to say it. Let me ask you guys a question. This is going to be a very important question for the rest of this whole discussion. You're supposed to put the Urim V'Tumim into the Koshen. So does that mean that the Urim V'Tumim is part of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol?
Or part of what?
Or it's a battery bag.
Oh, I mean, you're supposed to. I mean,
Who cares? What's the difference? It's a major difference, right?
For the second temple, makes a difference.
Why does it make a difference at all? So let him wear a T-shirt and sweatpants. Why does it make a difference if the Kohen Gadol wears?
Tradition.
Oh, it's very critical, right? Because if he doesn't wear the proper clothes, what happens to him?
God will strike at
him. Yeah, he's gonna get smited. He's not allowed to do the service if he's not wearing the proper clothing. One of the psukim that might say this is this expression, and it says, if you look at footnote Aleph, you see that? V'hayu al Aaron yalbanav, his clothing, these garments shall be on Aaron and his sons, b'vo'am al o'am o'ed, of the gishtam al mizbeach ha'sharif, either when they go into the Kodesh, or alternatively, they go onto the altar to serve, v'lo yisu avon v'meisu, and they won't sin and die. What do you mean? I mean, if they're wearing their clothes, then they'll have the proper mindset and they won't do any sins?
But they're not wearing the clothes.
That is the sin, exactly. The Pasuk is telling that is the sin, is that they must be wearing that. And if they don't,
But they don't have the Urim and Thummim, because they're not...
That's true. But you see that whatever garments they're instructed to wear, they have to wear. Otherwise...
That shows that they're not required. I mean, they're not required in...
No, but they don't have to wear the other four garments at all. But the Kohen Gadol has to wear eight. So if he's not wearing one of the eight, so then he is violating something at the penalty of death. So he has to wear them. Otherwise, chayav misa. So it's critical to know if the Urim V'Tumim is part of the Big Day Kahuna, or it's not part of the Big Day Kahuna. Because at the time of the Second Temple, what does Rashi tell us? What didn't they have?
Didn't have
Urim V'Tumim. So they didn't have that writing, according to Rashi, that went inside.
So then it's not a... It's not part of them.
And the Kohen Gadol was able to do the service, nonetheless. Says Rashi, because Urim V'Tumim is not, what?
Part
of the garments of the Kohen Gadol. Now, based on what we've been saying, that what do we call it? We call it a battery pack. So it makes a lot of sense. And what else do you see from here? Like you said, Josh, is what you were saying, right? That there are two things going on. There's a Choshen, and then there's
the Urim
V'Tumim. There's the Choshen speaking.
So it just doesn't work without it. So maybe in the second temple they didn't have that ability.
Beautiful.
To work.
Right on. So that's what Rashi said. They didn't have that name. So let's see. Source number 5. Rashi is coming from a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Inya. No, this is source number 5. This is straight up Gemara.
Okay.
Yuma Chaf Aleph Amud Beis.
Number 5.
What does it mean in the Pasuk when it says Chabed, the Navi Chagai has a nevuah about the second Beis HaMikdash, the second temple, and God says, I will desire it and I will put my weight there, meaning I will desire it, I will give it kavod, I will give it honor, I will give it glory. Now there's something so interesting about this Pasuk. The Ertza is in the feminine. That's why there's a hay at the end. So what should the next word also be if we're referring to the temple in the feminine? The achabed? This is what the Pasuk actually says. But what should it be?
Ikabda.
So what happened to the hay? It's an interesting linguistic question. The grammar here is not appropriate. What happened to the hay? If we're referring to the temple in the feminine, the Eretz Bo, why doesn't it say v'ikabdo, and I will put my honors here, and I will give it glory? Says the Gemara, that's actually how you read it, even though it's not written that way. V'ikabdo, that's how it's read. So why is it missing the hay in the way that it's written?
Well, I mean, the hay's been important in, like, talks about when you get married, you know, the Ish and Isha, you know, so it's kind of like, not like the second temple, it's kind of like a couple of times, you know, it's not like a full-on marriage, but...
Right, exactly, that's what the Gemara says, but it says specifically the hay is a hint to something that's lacking. What's lacking? Five things. Okay, Hashem, your mind is saying.
To an extent.
Which says this, he was missing five things. The hey here is not a reference to Hashem.
Oh.
In a certain sense it is, we'll see in a minute. But it's a reference to five things. The number five. Five things were lacking over there. You ready for the list?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Number one. Okay, you guys count, okay? I'm just going to read them. You guys count how many there are. Aaron, Kapores, Kruvim. We learned about those last week, right? The Aaron and the lid and the Kruvim.
Is
the Kruvim part of the Aaron? Ruach HaKodesh, Urim Metumim. Edwin's an accountant back there. He's got a lot of numbers back there. It doesn't seem to be five. So Rashi right away says exactly what Adam just said, which is that Aaron, Kaporis, and Kruvim are one thing. Okay, so we'll knock those out. Aaron, Kaporis, and Kruvim is one. Eish is two. Shechina is three. Ruach HaKodesh is four. Urim Metumim, five. Okay, so you see from the Gemara that what was one of the things they didn't have in the Second Temple? The Urim V'Tumim. So how does Rashi explain this Gemara? What does it mean they didn't have Urim V'Tumim?
They didn't have them.
They didn't have what?
Urim V'Tumim.
The Choshen?
No, the Urim V'Tumim.
The whole Choshen?
No.
Just the
Urim V'Tumim.
Urim V'Tumim. That piece of paper, Rashi said, that goes inside, that activates the Choshen into the Choshen HaMishpat, says Rashi, that way it gives judgment and it talks. That was missing in Bais Shin. You ready for this? Right, they didn't have it for whatever reason, whatever happened to it. Number six, Tosos. On that same page in the Gemara Yuma, Dan, are you ready for this? It's going to blow your socks off. Urim v'tumim havu. Open that wearing slip-on. Urim v'tumim havu. They definitely had the Urim v'tumim, says Tosos. Shem lokein, because if they didn't have it, what do you think he's going to say? That's right. He would have been lacking his garments. It wouldn't respond to those that asked it. That's all the Gemara means. It wouldn't respond. It doesn't mean it didn't have the physical Urim V'Tumim. It means that the Urim V'Tumim didn't respond to questions. So you have a Machlokas, Rashi, and Tosfos. You see now what was bothering Rashi for sure. Is that Rashi's insisting what? That the Urim V'Tumim is...
Not
part of the Choshen at all. It's something completely different that activates it and makes into Choshen HaMishpat. Two roles of Aaron. That's why it repeats. We suggested enough to Aaron. He's carrying two things. But one has nothing to do with the other. Just because it doesn't have the Urim and Thummim and it's not active as Choshen HaMishpat doesn't mean he's not wearing his proper clothing. The clothing is the first Nasa Aaron without an Urim and Thummim. That's his clothing. But Tosu seems to be saying what?
That they are part of it.
That didn't. What we thought was a battery pack is really part of the Choshen. What do you guys think about that?
You should listen to it freely.
What do you guys think about that?
I like to see what they're basing their arms upon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's...
Which all too often Rashi expression is in the DS.
I mean, one's saying they are part of the Choshen, and the other saying they aren't.
Okay.
And then one implies that during the second basically the there was or in the community.
But check this out. Check out source number seven. Source number seven is Rav Yaakov Emden. Rav Yaakov Emden, he was a famous personality, a famous machlokes, him and Rav Yonatan Eibshitz over Shabbatai Tzvi. He accused Rav Yonatan Eibshitz of being a Sabbatean. They were the two major Gedolei Hador at the time. He's the son of the Chacham Tzvi. Anyway, he has comments on the Gemara. They're referred to as Hagos Yaivitz, printed in the back of the Gemara. So on this Gemara, on this Tosfos, he speaks up. He says like this. On the comment of Tosfos, that if he didn't have, he would have been tumim, can't be, he would have been lacking in his garments. Lo avin lo minayin davar zeh. I don't understand where Tosus is coming from, where he got this from. V'chi urim v'tumim beged heim. Is the urim v'tumim a garment? V'haksiv. V'yitain el ha-choshen. You put it into the choshen. Right? What did we point out? It doesn't say what?
Make it.
Make it. It says put it in. So what does he think that means? He thinks that's the proof that this is not one of the garments because you didn't even make it. It's something else. You need to put it. Ihachi. Without the Urim V'Tumim, it's also called a Choshen. The Choshen, whether or not you have it, because it's something you need to put in. It's not part of something that you make. Obviously, if you're not making it, it can't be part of the Big Day Kahuna. Choshen, whom the Kosh is more than the Gadim, and Akin Bo, and the Choshen, obviously, the Kohen Gadol must have, as we learn elsewhere. So you hear his proof? You hear what he's saying? It's very interesting. He points out also that when it comes to the actual making of the choshen, when the pesukim describe, we'll get to them in Pekude, Vayakel and Pekude are parallel to Truma Tetzaveh, that Vayakel parallels Truma, that's the creation of the Mishkan, and Pekude parallels Tetzaveh, and that it's the creation of all the Big Day Kahuna. In the Pekude, you'll notice that it never says they made the Urim Mitzvah. Of course not, because it just says put them in. He says, exactly what you get them. That's exactly his point. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it or whatever it was. But it's not something that they make. It's not part of Big Day Kahuna. There's never even a command to make it. Obviously, it's not part of Big Day Kahuna. So, we'll finish with this today. What we're going to see, Be'ezra Shoshan, tomorrow is this exact machlokas reflected in the Rambam and the Ravid. And then we'll go on to try and explain exactly what's going on over here. What's this machlokas all about? Why would you say one way or the other? What exactly the roles of Urim V'Tumim of prophecy and priests will understand as the Choshen HaMishpat.